In Acts 25, verse 10 through 12, it says, Then Paul said, I stand at Caesar's judgment seat where I ought to be judged. To the Jews I have done no wrong, as you very well know. And so the background of that is there had been a riot, he'd been arrested, and then there was this desire to send him back to face the people who had wrongly accused him. And so he said, for if I am an offender or have committed anything worthy of death, I do not object to dying. And Paul was one of those people who was willing to take the consequences for what he did. He says, but if there is nothing in these things of which these men accuse me, no one can deliver me to them. I appeal to Caesar. And Paul was a Roman citizen by birth and was able to have the rights of citizenship, and so he appealed to Caesar. And this works into the story later. We can see in Acts 26, verse 32, there's a lot of detail in this portion of the book of Acts. If you want the full story, you can read these chapters beginning about chapter 23 and onward. In Acts 26, 32, it says, Then Agrippa said to Festus, This man might have been set free if he had not appealed to Caesar. And so we go back to that appeal where Paul, standing for his own rights, appealed to Caesar. And so now that was put into action, and he was on his way then soon to Rome. We're going to pick it up in Acts 27 and just go through this chapter pretty much intact, but I'll be bringing some points as we go. Some lessons we can learn, and we'll read these as we go through it, so it'll save some time. Lesson one, and I'm going to actually back up just a little bit for this lesson, is in chapter 23 of Acts, and that is that it's God and Christ who are working things out, and sometimes what God is doing and what Christ is doing is not really visible to us on the ground here in real time. But we can see that this was in place. And you can see an earlier incident that had become this, begun this long series of events. And I'm putting this whole episode of Paul's ministry into one big trial that he was enduring. Really awful things happening for an extended period of time. And we can see how that fits in. In Acts 23, verse 10 and 11, it says, And when there arose a great dissension, the commander, fearing lest Paul might be pulled to pieces by them, commanded the soldiers to go down and take him by force from among them and bring him to the barracks. And so if you were to put yourself in that experience, you see there's a religious persecution, there's cultural persecution, and there's political intervention going on. And it's not a lot different than sometimes we experience in the world around us here. Verse 11, But the following night the Lord stood by him. And there are occasions in Paul's ministry when we know this was actual fact, that the Lord stood there with him. And I believe this is a literal wording. The Lord stood by him and said, Be of good cheer, Paul, for as you have testified for me in Jerusalem, so you must also bear witness at Rome. And so from that then onward, Paul would have known that he would eventually wind up in Rome. And later he had appealed to Caesar, and now we pick it up as he begins his expedition then to Rome, and that epic shipwreck story. Sometimes the winds are contrary. This is one of the lessons we can pick up from the story. If you turn now to Acts 27, and we'll be there for the rest of the sermon message. In Acts 27 and verse 1, we'll pick it up, and then I want to stop at some of these points along the way. And when it was decided that we should sail to Italy, they delivered Paul and some other prisoners to one named Julius, a centurion of the Augustan regiment. So entering a ship of Andromedium, we put to sea, meaning to sail along the coast of Asia. Aristarchus, a Macedonian of Thessalonica was with us. You can check back and see he was with Paul and Luke on other journeys as well and was a travel companion with him. If you take the time to research this chapter and you see all of these details, they fit. They fit geographically, they fit historically in other ways as well. And the next day we landed at Sidon, and Julius treated Paul kindly and gave him liberty to go with his friends and receive care. So there was already this relationship between this Roman centurion, and only centurions were permitted to be able to transport prisoners, because there was this appeal to Caesar. They had to be taken safely to Caesar, and a centurion was always in charge of those prisoners. But there's this relationship building between that Roman officer and the Apostle Paul. And when we had put to sea from there, we sailed under the shelter of Cyprus because the winds were contrary. I'd like to stop at points along the way and say, how does that physical detail give me a spiritual lesson? And sometimes we can face contrary winds in our own lives, maybe in our health or in situations around us, and things are coming at us that are not in our control. And so here this whole ship of people were facing these contrary winds. And when we had sailed over the sea, which is off Cilicia of Pamphylia, we came to Myra, a city of Lycia. So you can track this on the map and see where it was. And if you have historical accounts, like I have a really great book written by two writers who actually went on a wind-powered ship back in the mid-1800s and took this same journey and wrote about it from their point of view in a ship similar to this, so a sailing ship. And there the centurion found an Alexandrian ship sailing to Italy, and he put us on board. And from Alexandria in Egypt was where they exported wheat and produce to Rome to help feed the Romans there in the bigger cities. And so this was a freighter coming from North Africa and going up to Rome. And when we had sailed slowly many days and arrived with difficulty off Cnidus, the wind not permitting us to proceed, we sailed under the shelter of Crete off Salome. And again, the wind was there. And sometimes it's difficult making headway against a strong wind that's holding us back. And imagine in your life, how that feels sometimes when it's like you're fighting against the headwind to make progress in maybe in school or in your job or in your career or whatever part of life. Sometimes there's a headwind. It's like obstacles in our way that keep us from making the progress that we want to make, or sometimes even to proceed forward. We have to wait things out. It says, passing it with difficulty, we came to a place called Fair Havens near the city of Lycia. That's one of those cities that has the name that's enticing, Fair Havens. But if you read about it, the sailors did not think it to be Fair Havens. It was a place that had a nice sounding name, but it wasn't a place where sailors or merchants would like to spend the winter. And that's what they were facing there. Where can we be so we could wait this winter out? And now when much time had been spent, verse 9, and sailing was now dangerous because the feast was already over, Paul advised them, saying, and so there's just this little passing thought in here about the feast. And so that gives us the time setting. And it doesn't tell us how Paul and Aristarchus and Luke and others kept the feast. We know that they would have. We just don't know the details of how that happened, but it's mentioned here, and Luke is writing about it. In verse 10, saying, "Men, I perceive this voyage will end with disaster and much loss, not only of the cargo and ship, but also of our lives." And sometimes it's obvious that others are making wrong decisions. And here Paul and his travel companions and Julius the centurion, they were at somewhat of the mercy of those others who were making the decisions to sail on, the merchants who had a load to deliver and trying to get there in time to get it delivered in their merchant ship to be profitable. Nevertheless, the centurion was more persuaded by the helmsman and owner of the ship than by the things spoken by Paul. And so you can imagine these conversations where the centurion is talking to those people experienced with that ship and that sea lane and that travel. And they're saying, yeah, we can do it. We got it. And Paul's going, this doesn't seem right to me. And sometimes, have you ever been in a position like that where a decision is made? It could even be at church. It could be something like this. It's too dangerous to go to Tacoma right now for church. And someone has to make that decision. You get the input from the different ones, and you pray that it's the right decision, and you pray that it's the right decision to come here today, to open this building and to gather in it, you know? And so we put our lives sometimes in the hands of people who make decisions. Where will the feast be? Will it be there this year? All these things, we can apply them in our personal lives too. And sometimes we would have made a different decision, but we have to follow along with what's there. And that's a part of life. In verse 13, it says, and when the south wind blew softly, supposing that they had obtained their purpose, putting out to sea, they sailed close by Crete. Sometimes the conditions right now are not what we should be considering. What about tomorrow? What's it going to be like next week? You know, sometimes we have to plan ahead and think ahead. And so here, this shipload of people, 276 of them, by the way, were there. And it seemed right to the helmsman and to the captain, look, it's beautiful day. Let's just go. We can do it. We've got this. It says, but not long after, a tempestuous wind arose called a Euroclydon. And so, have you ever been out in the water when a storm blows in suddenly and you fear for your life? I've had that occasion once, and it was not on a bigger ship. It was a small fishing boat. We're out on a very large lake, miles and miles across, and a storm blew in so quickly, and my brother-in-law and I were stuck out there in major waves, and there was, it blew us up into a place where there were a lot of stumps sticking up out of the water, and we could just tie onto one of those and just ride it out, and, you know, battering against the logs and stuff that were there. But it was a frightful day, but we made it out. And sometimes it's not those conditions that began the day or the week or the month. It's what's coming. What can you anticipate coming? Sometimes the consequences of our actions, or for us or for others around us who make decisions, can cause great trouble. Let's continue in verse 15 through 17. So when the ship was caught and could not head into the wind, we let her drive. That's a really amazing thing, to have a ship this big, letting her drive. That means you just give up trying to make forward progress and you let the wind drive you, take you. Now, of course, if they're doing that, they have to keep the boat positioned in the wind so that the prow of the ship is facing into the wind, so that you can let it push you backwards or a little bit sideways. If you were to turn broadside to it, you're flipped over, you know, because of this. And so there's a lot of navigation going on, a lot of problem solving going on as these things unfold. You know, if we stop the story right there, you say, oh, we let her drive. We got out of that one. No. The problem's still going on, isn't it? They're still out in the water in a storm. And so now we can continue. Because sometimes in our lives, the problems go on and on. Like what we're going through now, this COVID-19 pandemic and other things around us. Just because you let it open up a little bit doesn't mean the whole thing's over yet. Verse 16, and running under the shelter of an island called Clauda, we secured the skiff with difficulty. A skiff would be a smaller boat, like a lifeboat, that would be pulled behind the bigger boat. And they secured the skiff. That means they had to bring it on board and secure it, maybe tie it next to, but I'm guessing in this case they actually had to bring it on board and secure it so that it wouldn't be a drag against them and all this wind and the waves. And as they're driving in the wind, they don't want that thing back there. If it were to sink, it pulls them down too. And so they had to secure it, but it was very difficult. And so those decisions we make affect us, and they cause a lot of trouble. And sometimes it's like a slow-motion disaster that can hardly be avoided. And verse 17, when they had taken it on board, they used cables to undergird the ship. Think of this. They had to put cables around, if you could imagine the ship, and put cables down under the water and back up on the other side. They had to probably work this in from one end and to do this, because these bigger wooden ships of that time period were not built like the ships of today. They were made of wood, and this wood is creaking and moving against the waves and the wind, and they were trying to hold all this together. And so they're running cables around it to try to secure that. That tells us a lot. This boat was not something you'd want to be on in a storm at that time. And so they were doing everything they could to survive this, but it was very difficult. And so Paul and Aristarchus, and I expect Luke as well, were right there in the middle of this. Let's go to verse 18. And because we were exceedingly tempest-tossed, and I sort of use that as a subtitle, we were exceedingly tempest-tossed. Have you ever felt that in your life? Like, you get one part of a problem solved, and it goes on in another way, and another thing. And you can think of this, and I don't mean this to apply to any of us, but in the raising of children, and all the things, and all the many things that we could face in many different areas of life, sometimes it feels like we're exceedingly tempest-tossed. The next day, they lightened the ship. What does that mean, they lightened the ship? And sometimes, how do we apply something like that? You get rid of what's holding you back. You know, that tempest is about to sink the ship. Now you've got to do something to avoid that from happening. And so they lightened the ship. On the third day, we threw the ship's tackle overboard with our own hands. The tackle is that all those pulleys and ropes and levers and everything they use to load and unload these freighter ships and everything that they put on and took off that ship, they're taking the tackle off. And it's also what they use to raise and lower the sails. And that's pretty important material, and yet they're at that point in their understanding of the danger that they're throwing the tackle overboard. Imagine being out in a ship like this, and in all these waves moving, and the ship is groaning and creaking, and people getting seasick, everyone afraid, and you're just wanting to hang on to life. But look what it says in verse 20, but now when neither sun nor stars appeared for many days, and no small tempest beat on us. The understatement of that is impressive. No small tempest beat on us. This wasn't a little thing. This was a major storm. And all hope that we would be saved was finally given up. When all hope is given up. And now, if we think of this in a spiritual sense, when people are so tired of the things they're going through, they've tried so hard, they've done everything they know to do, and still it's getting worse. Still they have no way of helping themselves. But I want us to remember what the Lord said to Paul that night in Jerusalem when he stood by him. And maybe it was in Caesarea at the time. When he stood by him and said, "You will be a witness for me at Rome." And yet it's Luke who's writing this. And from his perspective, inspired by God, these are the words that were chosen. All hope that we would be saved was finally given up. It's really hard when people come to that point in their life, in whatever their trial. And if you've seen people, if you've been there, you know that there's something so very important is needed right then, and that is hope. You know, if they've lost that hope, and there's not much we can do until they can gain hope back a little bit and start filling that cup again. And again, if we stop at this point of the story, and what would we expect? I hope that none of us ever stop at this point of our story when all hope is lost. I pray and hope that we can get past that. And whatever your struggle, if you're helping someone who is at a point near that, and help them get through it as quickly as you can. And so what do we do when all hope is finally given up? We remember God. Paul began to express this more openly. I'm sure it was in his heart all along. In verse 21, "But after long abstinence from food, then Paul stood in the midst of them and said, 'Men, you should have listened to me and not have sailed from Crete and incurred this disaster and loss.'" He's talking to them, saying, basically here he's saying to the captain and to the owner of the ship or the one in charge of the ship, "This is a great loss. It's gone. You're not going to get it back. You should have listened to me and you wouldn't have been in this position." Now that didn't last long, and it doesn't really help a lot when we tell people, "I told you so." But sometimes they need to know that, because Paul was approaching it from the point of view of a minister inspired by God to speak to them, to be that light they needed right then. He says, "And now I urge you to take heart." You see what he did? He started encouraging those who had lost all hope that they would be saved. He began to encourage them all. He stood in their midst. He was that light of the world that they needed right then during a great and violent storm. "I urge you to take heart from there, for there will be no loss of life among you, but only of the ship." You know, it's like, don't even try to save this ship. "But no life, no loss of life among you." And why could he say this? How could he stand and tell them this? Look in verse 23, "For there stood by me this night an angel of the God of whom I belong and whom I serve, saying, 'Do not be afraid, Paul. You must be brought before Caesar. And indeed, God has granted you all those who sail with you.'" God has granted you. That implies that he had asked for their lives to be spared. And God had granted that request. And so he was able to stand there and tell them, "Take heart. I know that you'll make it. Therefore, take heart, man, for I believe God that it will be just as it was told me. What has God told us? You know, Paul had that faith because he heard the Lord tell him sometime before this. Well, God has told us things too, and he's told us that we will be saved. All who call upon the name of the Lord shall be saved. That we will inherit the kingdom, that we will be able to live forever in the kingdom of God, that we will be his sons and daughters. All these wonderful promises. We believe God, and that belief gives us hope and faith to be able to endure whatever trial, and even if our ship is sunk and we with it, we know that we will inherit the kingdom. For I believe God that it will be just as it was told me. We could look at the situations around us in our nation, in this world, and say it's really bad out there and a lot of people are hurting and getting sick and dying and troubles everywhere. We're tempest-tossed like never before. But we can believe God, and that is what we need, brethren. Sometimes there's a big however, and Paul brought that up in the next verse. However, we must run aground on a certain island. We can't dictate the outcome that God is working out or how he will work out these situations in our lives. Sometimes we're going to run aground. And sometimes that's his way of saving us. How was Paul, Aristarchus, Luke, Julius, and all these others, how were they to get off of that ship? There's no chance in that storm that they could be just brought into a little bay and find the quiet waters. They were going to run aground. However, we must run aground on a certain island. It's that uncertainty about when and how we'll be saved that can really test our faith. How are we going to come through this trial that we're in? As individuals, as congregations, whatever your particular trial is right now, or things we might face in the future. It's that transition from being on the ship that is being destroyed by the wind and the waves to getting onto solid ground that can be really scary. And at times it might seem for a while, this is such a dangerous place to be on the ship, but then when you face running aground, you realize, I'd rather be on this ship than battered against those rocks. And so let's read the story and see how this unfolds. But eventually we sense there's an immovable object or obstacle that we'll have to crash into. That ocean that seems so dangerous now looks better than the craggy rocks and the cliffs that we're headed toward. Verse 27 to 29. But when the 14th night had come, as we were driven up and down in the Adriatic Sea, driven up and down, it tells us the wind was changing direction and coming from one direction and then another. About midnight, the sailors sensed that they were drawing near some land. These were experienced sailors who understood the sounds and the sights and what they were going through. But this was in the dark of night, at midnight. And the earlier verse showed us there were no stars to be seen because it was so stormy and cloudy. And they took soundings and found it to be 20 fathoms. A fathom is 6 feet, so 120 feet of water. It's getting up to where it's rising toward a shoreline. And when they had gone a little further, they took soundings again and found it to be 15 fathoms. And so now it's only like 80 feet deep. So they're coming into that shallower water. And then fearing lest we should run aground on the rocks, they dropped 4 anchors from the stern and prayed for day to come. You imagine this boat, and as big as this building, we're talking about a freighter that had 276 people on it, plus the load of wheat and other things and all the tackle that was there. It was a sizable ship. So think of the size of this as we're going to it. But they dropped four anchors from the stern and prayed for day to come. Those four anchors would sink into that clay soil that's there in that area of the world. I've done some research on that, and it's not like a rocky bottom where these anchors would get stuck in the rocks. There it's more clay, and they'd sink in and hold that ship. And so now the ship is turned with the back would be toward the wind, and the front of it facing the crags of rock that's ahead of them, and they prayed for day to come. And as the sailors were seeking to escape from the ship, when you're in a big trial and a lot of people involved, you're going to see all different kinds of reactions to this, and people will do one thing or another, and some will just try to protect themselves and escape. And when they had let down the skiff into the sea, under pretense of putting out anchor from the prow, it's like pretending we're going to help you, and yet taking or trying to take the lifeboat for themselves. And Paul said to the centurion and the soldiers, "Unless these men stay in the ship, you cannot be saved." And I like this part because it shows the character and the decision-making ability of this centurion. Then the soldiers cut away the ropes of the skiff and let it fall off. And so the trust between Julius and Paul had grown to the point where when Paul said this, they get their swords out and cut those ropes and let that lifeboat fall off. Because by this time, Julius knew who to listen to. And it wasn't the ship's captain or the helmsman. And so he took care of that in a hurry. Verse 33, "And as day was about to dawn, Paul implored them all to take food." Notice how he turns his attention now to caring for these people as a shepherd would, as someone to be there to help them. "Today is the 14th day that you have waited and continued without food and eaten nothing." And sometimes we need to look around us and say, not only are we going through this difficult problem, but others are too. What do they need? And how can I help them? What can I do to encourage those around me as they go through this trial and their own? "Therefore, I urge you to take nourishment, for this is your survival, since not a hair will fall from the head of any of you." He was able to encourage them to the point and say, "I know God has granted that you will survive this." And he had to encourage them and tell them that. "And when he had said these things, he took bread and gave thanks to God in the presence of them all. And he honors our Father and prayed there in public, thanking him for all that he was doing. And when he had broken it, he began to eat." And so he has that example. And he begins to eat there. And just that little simple, let me just take a sip here at the right time. That little act of just taking some nourishment himself, it encouraged those around him. "That they were all encouraged and also took food themselves. And in all, we were 276 persons on the ship." Paul had been praying for every one of them. They knew how many were there, and they recorded it for us because Paul was caring for them and wanted their lives to be preserved too. "And so when they had eaten enough, they lightened the ship and threw out the wheat into the sea." Now they're just at the mercy of the wind, and they're doing everything they can to run aground in the right way. "And now when it was day, they did not recognize the land, but they observed a bay with a beach onto which they planned to run the ship if possible." You know, if you could run it up on a sandy beach instead of the rocky crags, that's a lot better. And so they were trying to do that. And they let go the anchors and left them in the sea. Last year, archaeological expedition actually claims to have found at least one of these anchors from this or from a contemporary ship very much like it. And so I don't know about that, but I've seen the pictures of the ones they brought up. But we know that they let those anchors in the sea, meanwhile loosening the rudder ropes, that rudder that would guide the ship, and they would just loosen it, and so then it would just be loose. It would let them go straight into the sandy beach, and they hoisted the mainsail to the wind. Now they want that wind to propel them onward into that beach and get there as quickly as they can. And it says they made for shore. They had a destination. They knew that's where we need to be right now. But striking a place where two seas met, they ran the ship aground. And the prow stuck fast and remained immovable, but the stern was being broken up by the violence of the waves. Imagine, again, being in something like the size of this building or bigger, and it's stuck, and the whole thing is breaking apart with the noise of that. Now, the soldiers' plan was to kill the prisoners. Remember back at earlier time when Paul and some friends were imprisoned and an angel let them out, and then the prison keepers were killed because the guards were killed because they should have not let these people escape. Well, and so these soldiers knew that if a prisoner were to escape, their life was on the line. But now the centurion steps back in. But the centurion, wanting to save Paul, kept them from their purpose and commanded that those who could swim should jump overboard first and get to land. And there were some of them who could not swim, even among the soldiers, even among all the other passengers and crew, and the rest, some on boards and some on broken pieces of the ship. And so it was that they all escaped safely to land. Brethren, I'm just pointing out that in the scriptures we can see examples of this. There's other examples too where God's people and others went through long and difficult trials. And God was with them and helped them through. And miraculous things can happen and did. And sometimes when it seems like all is lost, all is not lost because God is working something out. And I wonder, and I think we all might wonder, what is God working out now for his church, for this nation, for this world? Some of the things that we'll go through are going to be very difficult. And God has told us that it will be. And Paul was warned that it was dangerous to go. He was warned that they were going to lose all, there would be a great disaster and a loss of that ship. But also, he was granted the lives of everyone on board. There may be people around us who need us to stand strong in the faith and to be able to be there when they're going through their trials. There may be people who God wants to call right now, who will see the examples of people of faith in times of trial. And how do we react? And how do we convey to them this hope that we have and give them that little bit of hope as well? I guess what I'm saying, brethren, is we don't need to be among those who have no hope and give up all hope that we'd even be saved, because we have that hope. What a precious gift that is for us. And yes, we are going through a difficult trial, but you know where we are in it? We're probably at the point where we're getting on the ship. We probably haven't entered into the storm that tears the ship apart yet. We probably haven't got to the point where we're throwing tackle off the boat. There's probably a lot more in front of us that God knows is there. But he knows that with his help and with his spirit, that we can make it, and we will. And who knows how many others around us can survive as well. I found this to be an inspiring story and something that helps me to stay centered. I hope it's helpful to you. And brethren, as we go through this trial together, let's all do what Paul and Aristarchus and Luke did and set that example of faith and hope and courage and commitment and willingness to go through whatever we have to face. You could read the next chapter of Acts and you see that Paul's trial wasn't over yet. They'd simply just run aground on a place where there were people who were willing to help them and feed them and care for them. But his trial went far beyond that. But in the process of it, look what God did to help Paul to preach this word to the world and to write more books of the Bible as he arrived in Rome and wrote from there to his people, to God's people. Brethren, there's a lifetime of hope and a lifetime of adventure ahead of us. And the trials of this day are not to be compared to the glory that he will give to us when Jesus Christ returns.